Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's edition of the War Report. Well, today we have two guests, and we're going to do some things a little differently than we've done in the past, in that I'm inaugurating what I call the Profiles in Courage series, wherein each time we have a segment from that series, we'll talk to individuals or groups of people who have taken an extraordinary stance in the war on public education, on our side, of course. And in doing so, many of them have put themselves in harm's way, but they have still acted so courageously and brave that I felt it's necessary for us to highlight our heroes specifically throughout this campaign. And so today's guests are two exemplary examples of what I call profiles in courage. We're going to start off with one of them, and then about 20 minutes later, we'll bring in the second one to give a profile. Then, of course, towards the end of the show, Dr. Turner will come on and give this week's update about the walk from Connecticut to D.C. And if there's any time left, I may have a few words to say. But with that, let's get to our first profile. And our first profile is a teacher out of Florida, Terry. I almost want to call her Prius, but she's a Rolls Royce type of person, so her last name is Royce. Price. I just messed that up, Terry. Come on in and introduce yourself, and welcome to the War Report.
Well, hi, and thank you very much for having me. And I do have to tell people Troy's like Rolls Royce, because people do tend to want to mispronounce it from the spelling. You're
okay.
In good company.
And I'm notorious for messing up people's names, so you no exception here. All right, let's start with a small, short bio.
You'd like me to tell you about myself?
Yes.
I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher for more than 30 years. Started in LA schools, went to Dade schools, and have stayed in South Florida. I'm now in Broward schools. And I've been teaching pretty much everything. I started as a physical education teacher, became published a few times, was asked to teach language arts, did that for 14 years. And then recently, with the intrusion of Common Core into the language arts curriculum, I have requested to return to physical education, which I've been teaching for the last 2 years, and I'm very happy to go back to my roots. In that time, I spent 7 years in what I think was my calling of life, which was dropout prevention. I would spend 7 hours a day with the same, 25 to 28 kids who all had problems. Some of them had been in and out of jail. All of them had trouble in school. And they taught me so much. They were my teachers in learning how to really, truly understand love and the differences between people and how much work we have to do as educators to all the many different kinds of populations that we have that we don't understand.
Okay,
and I wrote a book
now
called Voices in the Hall. My book is called Voices
you.
In the Hall.
Thank you. I was about to mention that. What makes you one of my, my first profile in courage?
Well, I'd like to thank you for selecting me. I really am honored and somewhat blown away I wouldn't have thought of myself in that way, but I guess when you just do the work and you're just moving forward, you don't realize how you look to others. And I think I'm just doing what comes naturally. I began my my battle, I guess, with my own school when Common Core was imposed on my school, and we had a reading coach that was beginning to ask us to do scripted education. And that was the beginning of my battle at my school. And I really think it was just the courage to say, you know, my humanity is telling me that this is wrong. I'm not supposed to be scripted. I'm a good teacher. I'm creative. The kids love me. They're getting great scores. The writing scores are off the charts. Why would you give me a script and a bunch of dittos? And that was how my war began at my school. And from there, it's gone into, you know, the community and union and so forth. But that was the beginning of it. It's just me standing up for myself and saying, no, I'm not going to do that, and getting in a bit of trouble.
There's a context here, too. The state that you're in, as you mentioned, you're in Florida, a state that is not, well, is a right-to-work state, which means no unions, et cetera, a government that is solid, deep red, a government that is fully behind the privatization of education, public education, which filters down to the county government level, filters down to the Board of Education, which filters down through the individual schools. That is a hell of a war zone to be in, to take a stance.
Yes, it is.
Go ahead.
It is, and I didn't know what a war zone it was. I was really completely naive to what was happening. I didn't have a clue about the assault on education, and that's one of the reasons why I appreciate so much what you're doing and so many other groups that are out there trying to awaken the public, because I was certainly sleeping. I had no idea this was going on, and I didn't realize that Florida was the epicenter of the assault. I just knew that a reading coach showed up at my school, and she told me, teacher of the year, National Board Certified Teacher, who had a great relationship, great track record, 14 years at the same school, told me to do these dittos and to do 2 minutes of this and 5 minutes of that. So for me, it was just a human thing. It wasn't, there's a war in education. I had no clue. I was just trying to say to her, whoa, the line is drawn right here. You cannot cross this line. I'm a good teacher. I'm a practitioner. I studied. I know what I'm doing. You cannot come and bring me a bunch of dittos and tell me that that's better than the instruction that I have been doing, and very well, if I might add, for the last 14 years. So it was after that that I began to realize that there was an assault. But first, I just wanted to battle my right to teach the way I knew instinctively was the right way to teach for my students. So it was a very organic thing. I've just been placed in this odd place quite organically. Not that I knew there was an assault on education at all when I started.
What was the first thing that you did, and then lead us through to going from that individual battle up against maybe one person, two people, versus going to where you are now?
Well, the first thing that I did is I said no. I said, no, this isn't right. I'm not going to do this like this. And I was told a friendly way at first, and then it became less friendly, that yes, I was going to do this just this way. And I became very insulted. I'll never forget, I started blogging. My very first blog was about, you know, having to teach about pet centers on the day of Sandy Hook, the day everyone wanted to speak about, you know, what had happened in the tragedy of our country. And I had been given a lesson that I had to speak about renting pets. And it just seemed so absurd to me that my students wanted to know how this school is protected, you know, is this bulletproof glass? I mean, they were scared. This had happened the day before in our country, and I was having to speak about renting pets to my students, and it was so absurd that I just broke down and spoke to the kids heart to heart. And my students actually were the ones who inspired me, and they said, you know, this isn't right. We didn't know that you were going through this. And actually, we started the First Amendment Club at my school with a small group of students, and they helped me start learning how to blog. And so that's the first thing I did was say no. That became a problem later when the reading coach who was at my school didn't like the fact that I was saying no in this way. And I wasn't saying no completely. I was saying no to 2 minutes of this and 3 minutes of this. If you want me to adjust a curriculum because that's what the school is adopting, I'm a team player. I just can't be told that I'm going to do this for 3 minutes and no more than 3 minutes. So, one, I started speaking up about things like, you know, large packets of Dittos that had to go, you know, over Christmas holiday and spring break, and I said no to that. I started to feel the heat. I started to feel that people wanted me to not speak. And for myself, I was born in Cuba. My family left, you know, beautiful island, beautiful life until communism came because of the freedom of speech. So I'm not someone that you're going to tell, do not speak. So I was just insulted, and I just continued to stand true to myself without making it too loud. I didn't want to let everybody at the school, you know, in on my, you know, battle to have my own rights served, but I was continuing to say no. And then I just began to slowly learn about other groups that were having these kinds of problems, and I began to learn about the general assault on education that's going on. And one of the things that was most interesting to me is that one of the things that I feel was a retribution or retaliation, rather, to my speaking is that I was actually told that I was going to be teaching something that I was not particularly good at. I had already voiced my concerns, but that I was going to be teaching it without a classroom. I would be pushing books on a cart from room to room. Now, this happens occasionally to teachers, but normally not to a 14-year veteran who, and when there are a number of classrooms available in school. So for me, that was just like, wow, this is what you do to people? We have many, many classrooms available. Are you telling me I cannot have a classroom? I am going to push books around, and that's going to be good for students? So I just, again, said no. I didn't know how I was going to say no to that, but I felt like they were trying to push me out of the school, so to speak, and I was a union steward, so it became a bit complicated. But I tried to continue. I tried to continue on, just, I'm not going to allow this. You can't do this to people. You can't do this to teachers. My feeling was, I'm a strong person. I've never been bullied. I'm doing a good job here. Why are you treating me like this? And it was then that I had this epiphany that it's not me. They're doing this to everyone, and it just took them a long time to get around to me. And when they got around to me, I said, no, it's not happening. I'm not getting kicked out of this classroom. I am not going to allow this. I live 7 blocks from this school. This is my community. These are my students. You cannot kick out a person who is from this community. And when my union didn't help me, I actually went to the mayor. I actually got parents involved because I just felt like this is a problem for my community because these kids need me. And, yeah, I'm not afraid to say that. They need me. You cannot kick me out of the classroom and expect me to quietly go in shame and go hide somewhere like a cockroach when you open a drawer. That is not me. That is not Terry Preuss. I've never done that, and I'm not going to do it now. And so I think just, you know, digging in my heels and saying no is what propelled me into the further fight that continued with my union when I felt I wasn't getting the necessary help from my union, which was surprising because I thought anyone who's getting kicked out of their classroom for no reason when there are lots of classrooms will get protection from their union, right? When the protection didn't come. Yeah, you would think. When the protection didn't come as quickly and as easily as I thought, that's when this thing became a really, really big deal to me because I thought, you know, I'm just not somebody you push around. Nobody ever pushes me around. If anything happens, I resolve it myself with the person. These things don't happen to me. And if you're able to get to the point where you're doing this to me, what are you doing to thousands of others? And I just felt like I needed to take this on because I felt like I could, because I felt like no one's ever pushed me around. And I can do this for others because I see that others are being pushed around. And how painful is that when a teacher is told, you're going to go and work off of a cart, you're going to push a cart around the school? Most teachers would leave or just be in shame and keep it quiet. And I decided to take the complete opposite approach and tell everyone, I can't believe I got kicked out of this classroom. Can you believe what they're doing? And it worked. I just became more vocal. As they wanted to silence me, I became more vocal. And I was not going to let this happen this way in my community, no.
So now, you acting as an individual, you have now taken it all the way up to the mayor, you've gotten the community involved. I know what's going on because I follow your blog. Tell us about the gag that you're fighting now, the fight with the union, and the fight with the schools. The school district, that's what really has put you in the limelight. We know about you now across the country for the latter three things that I just said.
Well, fortunately, because of community involvement, parents, kids, and a school board that eventually did listen, I'm extremely persistent, they did eventually listen. I resolved everything at my school for myself, for the few people who were willing to put their names and their faces out front and say no along with me. We resolved everything, and we're all happy campers there. What happened, though, is that I was already elected as an executive officer for Broward Teachers Union, and I am also a district advisory council for my county. So I was kind of a person who sort of, if you're going to take someone and kick them out of their classroom, this is probably the person you don't want to do this to. So I was really shocked and went to my union and said, look, guys, I was just starting as an executive board member. I got kicked out of my classroom. They're telling me that I'm not going to have a classroom next year. If they're doing this to me and I'm on the executive board, they're just laughing at us. They're making fun of our union. What are we doing about this? Well, I never could get answers, and I never could get help. And essentially, the problem of the teachers being bullied and being treated poorly was not something that my union was taking on in a way that I thought was effective for our community or for other teachers. So I just began to speak about, the need to do that. When I started looking at what was going on in the union, I felt like there was a certain level of inability to rise to the occasion of the assault on education, like they were not aware of what was going on. By this time now, I was aware of the assault, and I knew we have to do different things, we have to take other measures, and they just weren't there. So I began speaking about this, and another election was up, so I thought, well, let me try and help these folks, so let me see if I can run for something. And as it turned out, some very, very great people wanted to run with me. So I ended up running for president of my local, along with another colleague of mine and her team and, the incumbents. And what happened is that, first of all, I saw firsthand how rules will be bent and will be broken, and how difficult it is to hold people accountable, which I'm not very happy about, because our Constitution and our Bill of Rights is very, very clear. And if we are going to allow locals to break certain rules, my inalienable rights, for example, I think we have a problem, and we need to, really, really focus on that. So what began as, I'm going to seek out further leadership to try to improve things, began like, whoa, what kind of can of worms is this I've opened up, and what in the world is going on here, and do these people not know that this is the United States of America? In my getting vocal about what had happened, a lot of things occurred that I don't want to get into all the details of, but I got to tell you, it was hard for me to continue forward to press the rights of myself as an individual and my colleagues as union members. There were eight of us who were all trying to bring a certain point across, and basically the entire country of leaders in unions were trying to assist in the way that they normally assist, and I can only say that because that's how they assisted us, and it didn't seem to be what I was expecting. So I became a little more vocal, and now, you know, all of us who ran in that election where we feel that, you know, things occurred that shouldn't have occurred, and, you know, more people, we just won another election where we now have 12 seats. We've outseated the incumbents by 12 seats, but we just felt like it's getting to a point where we need to tell the members what's really happening, because they're trying to tell us not to speak. And our president is actually rewriting the Constitution as we speak, pushing it through our executive board even when she doesn't have a quorum, and plans to go ahead and send this Constitution out to the stewards for a vote, which, if you know, in August, people are coming back from vacation. They might not read every single word, but there is a gag order in the Constitution, and there was a gag order and fines and penalties and all kinds of things at the when we first read it. And then the next ones that were coming up were not fully given to us prior to votes, so we were not able to read them prior to a meeting. So I have no idea what the final product is going to be, but that is not okay. That is not American. That is wrong. And by the way, no one's ever going to gag Terry Price.
Okay, Terry, I'm going to have to cut to our next guest, but I'll say this. Terry will be back, folks. We will hear more about this saga in terms of the voting and who wins the war on this particular issue. So, Terry, I'm saying to you now, I want you to come back and continue your story.
Thank you. I'd be happy to come back. Absolutely.
Okay.
I would be honored.
Okay. Gus?
Yes, sir?
How are you? And welcome to the War Report.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And he's coming to us from the state of Massachusetts. He has a story similar to Terry, and I will try and maybe bring some of the commonalities together at the end of the show, if I have time. So with that, Terry, not only introduce yourself, give that short bio, and then let's get into what makes you a person that is being profiled for your courage.
So a little mini bio? Okay.
Yeah.
I spent my early years in Puerto Rico. I moved here to Holyoke, Massachusetts when I was still young. Have lived in Holyoke most of my life, went into the military, got out of the military, started teaching. And so, you know, now I find myself in this situation where the world just doesn't make sense to me as far as what public education has become. And I think that's where I'm at right now. And the fight that I'm involved in, and I guess
Let's start in terms of how it started.
So this fight that I'm involved in, I'd like to start by saying that the people who I find to be really courageous are the ones who have been able to support me even when it's not popular. So even as things have become difficult and things have become really crazy and the limelight has shined right on me, there are people who have stuck by me from the very beginning up until right now. So I find them to be more courageous than myself. And as far as the fight, for me, it really started in October of 2013. For the previous 2 years, I've been watching, you know, my colleagues kind of suffer under a new paradigm shift in public education. And I guess it had been happening before, but for me, I started noticing it in 2011. And for 2 years, I watched my colleagues who were, a lot of them were my friends, close and dear friends, and, you know, leaving home crying. One of the things I noticed was a lot more anti-anxiety medication being taken by my own friends. Little things like that. And so by October 2013, I really felt uncomfortable in my own skin. I felt like I was being disrespectful to a heritage of fighters for watching my friends suffer and not really getting into it and not defending them and not fighting for them. And it was in October 2013 that I decided to change that. And I remember waking up one morning and just saying to myself, are you prepared to live in a cardboard box? I know that sounds drastic, but that's basically the point that I had come to, is this point of realization, this epiphany where I was either going to sacrifice everything or stay out of the fight completely. And that's how I am as a human being. I'm either all in or not in at all. And I decided I was going all in. I was willing to sacrifice whatever I needed to in order to achieve some kind of result and take back the profession from people and the billionaires.
And what were some of the first things that you did as an individual that landed you where you are today? Again, I know your story because I've been following
right.
it, but
so
it, most
in October,
don't.
In October, when I had that realization, I sent an email to my principal. That was my first act of revolution, I guess you could say. And the email was a simple one. It was CC'd to the entire staff at my school, and all it said was, when exactly do you want me to compile the data? Because I can either teach or compile data. That was my first act. It was roughly it was benign, but she didn't take it that way. February 2014, I showed up to a school committee meeting with some colleagues, some fellow revolutionaries, and we brought up the issue of data walls and how inappropriate we felt it was to have in a public education setting. Now, data walls, for people who aren't familiar with them, is basically displaying student scores in a public space so that other students and other teachers can see the student scores. And technically, they weren't supposed to have identifiable markers, but the students were given an ID number, and every single student knew each other's ID number, so the system was flawed inherently. And so we fought against that, and that's really what brought me into the limelight, so to speak. And from that point on, I showed up to every single school committee meeting, and I had a different piece that I want to talk about. I talked about Common Core. I talked about standardized testing. I talked about teacher retention and teacher attrition. I basically talked about every big-ticket item we can think of when we think of public education. And in the course of speaking out and in the course of starting this revolution, it dawned on me that I had to do something with the union as well. You know, I had no ill will against anybody who was in the union prior to me becoming president, but I just didn't feel they were doing enough to make any kind of change, to affect any kind of positive change. There needed to be a change in leadership, so I decided to run for president, and I think that served as the impetus for the district fire me in June of 2014, and again in June 2015. So to kind of cover and give some context, in June 2014 when I was fired, we issued a complaint with the Department of Labor Relations. They found that there was probable cause, and by November of 2014, we had reached a settlement with the district to bring me back to work. I started work on November 24th. Then on June 12th, I was once again fired. This time, you know, the claim is a little different. This time, they're going to claim that I'm an ineffective teacher. So that's currently where we stand right now. That's very fresh.
Ineffective teacher. How long have you been teaching?
This will be my ninth year now.
Your ninth year. And prior
yes.
to this ineffective rating, what type of ratings were you getting previously?
I was, up until February 2014, when I started speaking out publicly, I was an awesome teacher. As a matter of fact, there are some teachers that complained about me, and friendly complaints. I'm not talking about, like, lodging complaints against me, but they always called me the golden boy. Like, I could do no wrong in my school. And that kind of bothered me. This idea that somehow I was getting a different treatment than my colleagues were really bothered me, because that's, for me, the easiest way to spot ineffective leadership is when you have leaders who treat people differently. That's the most blatant sign that a leader is not being true to the leadership ideal. So for me, that's, you know, that encompasses just about everything right there.
Now, you lost your job, but you still
right.
remain president of your local.
Correct.
Which is an anathema. And then you file your case. The state finds, the labor board finds in your favor. You get your job back. What type of job did you get back? And
the same job. The same job. Not at the same school, which was a little heartbreaking. You know, I loved the school I was at. I had a lot of good friends there. I knew all the kids all the way from fifth grade to eighth grade. But the change was actually good. I got the same job. I was an English teacher for sixth and eighth grade the year I was let go, And I was an English teacher this past year, sixth and eighth grade English, just at a different building. So it was hard changing the scene, but it was a good change. I got to meet a lot more people, and I got to get involved with a lot more students.
Were you treated, I mean, this is going to be a silly question, but basically, were you treated any differently the second time around by administration that you work for? And two, were you visibly under scrutiny by the administration? Were they trying to build a more effective case, justification, for your non-renewal?
The way I like to describe it to people is somebody who smiles and hugs you with one hand and uses the knife with the other hand. So on the surface, it was very, very cordial. What I can kind of put out there to the public, so you got people can kind of get an idea. Now, I work with a lot of teachers in this district. I'm president of 500 teachers in Holyoke, Massachusetts. It would be really, really, really close to impossible to have a teacher that was proficient, exemplary, to make a shift so suddenly to ineffective. And here's how I'm going to demonstrate that. So I had plenty of observations between August of 2011 and February of 2014, all positive. February 2014, when I started speaking out, I have had 11 negative observations from that day forward. I have not been able to have one positive outcome of any observation since I started speaking out. Now, if anybody who's familiar with... What's that?
The reason I asked the question the way that I did, I wanted you to say what you did say and to prove a point. What is happening to you is classic out of the textbook of how you come back a second time to get done what you couldn't get done the first time. And when I say classic, my audience know that I went to law school. I didn't finish after I got my PhD. And I was teaching a class at university. I was a university professor, and I was teaching a class. A student came up to me and said, would you consider helping a personal friend of mine who's having a labor issue dispute? And I said, I'm not a bar attorney. You don't have to be for this. I ended up flying up to the state of California capital, and before a union board, represented a person who worked for the union who was being set up, had been fired. She was appealing, and I was handling her appeal. And what the people did, it was two lawyers, by the way, who were hired by the union to da-da-da-da-da. For some reason, they turned against her. Up until that point, she got exemplary evaluation on top of evaluation on top of evaluation. But when they turned against her, they used one of her colleagues to supposedly monitor, unknown to her, took notes, and based upon these notes, this is why they, quote, fired her. Bottom line is, I won her case. She got a job back. And I told her, they're going to come after you like you've never seen before. They made a mistake in terms of putting their case together. They're coming back. A year later, they came back, and they was able to fire her again. I didn't represent her the second time, et cetera. What you're describing is exactly what happened when I was doing this thing. I was also teaching at the same time. And it's classic. And I'm sure you knew going back into the classroom that they were going to be looking over your shoulder, but this time with a bigger magnifying glass.
What you have here is a twofold situation in how they're trying to handle me. One, they're trying to handle a rabble-rouser / dissenter / troublemaker, whatever you want to label me as. And on the other, you have this really historical setup of labor leadership and how the district slash management is trying to dictate the union's leadership. So they have a president now that is a thorn in their side, that's questioning everything and that wants to challenge everything. And they want an easy way to remove that leadership. And so this is their attempt at affecting leadership in the union.
They want you to become a corporate union. Or they want to maintain the corporate union relationship.
Yeah, they want to. They want, so the school district wants to be able to decide who can be part of the union leadership, and they do so by default of hiring and firing. You know, that's their viewpoint anyway. If we fire this president, or if we fire this teacher who happens to be the president, we have just gotten rid of one of our biggest problems.
Well, the biggest problem.
Yes.
Where are you now in this battle?
We're getting ready to file with the state again. It's almost a repeat of last year. It really is kind of pitiful. I really have the sincere hope that we wouldn't have to go through this again, so we can really have some challenging discourse, but discourse nonetheless. And you know, people are so afraid of having open dialogue. All they want is backroom deals and private conversations where they don't have to commit to anything publicly. And I want the opposite. I don't let people get away with anything else but public discourse. It doesn't matter what the issue is. It needs to be talked about openly and publicly. And right now, public education is under attack. We know who's attacking us. There's a lot of rich people. And they want to have those conversations in private so they can try and persuade people, oh, listen, this is better for you guys. Charter schools are going to work out for you guys. Merit pay is going to work out for you guys. Longer school days are going to be great for you guys. You know, all these ideas that we know to be absolutely horrible and detrimental to public education as an institution of democracy, and that's what they want. They want to rip all that away and make us into another corporation.
To bring us to, we got another 3 or 4 minutes here. Quickly go through the individual steps again of what has happened to you. Short sentence.
Right.
And then where you are in terms of what you're going to do, and as president, and especially if you keep your job, what are you trying to accomplish, which threatens them more than anything?
I'll try and handle the chronology, and then I'll talk about being president. So chronologically, October 2013, the awakening happens. February 2014, the first public speaking out occurs at a school committee meeting. For 3 months following that, I attended every single school committee doing the same thing, bringing up issues. May of 2014, I was elected president of the Hoyer Teachers Association. June 12th of 2014, I was released or fired or non-renewed, whatever popular language we want to use. We filed with the state in July of 2014, and by November 2014, we reached a settlement with the Holyoke School District to give me my job back. I got my job back on November 24th, 2014, and on June 12, 2015, 7 months later, I was fired again. And as far as what I'm aiming to do as president of the Holder Teachers Association, for me, it's quite simple. I don't believe that anybody, and this goes across the spectrum, I don't care what job it is, no one should be in a leadership position unless their desire is to affect change and be willing to do so at their own demise. If you're not willing to do that, you should not be taking any leadership position. This goes all the way to the military, to corporations, to teaching, anything at all. You assume leadership. That means everybody that falls underneath, all the people that, you know, you quote-unquote, the subordinates, you are protecting them. You are their first line of defense. And it seems to me that leadership right now is the exact opposite, where we're throwing people under the bus and we're using them as cannon fodder and as human shields to protect the leadership, and that's inherently wrong. It's the leadership that has to be able to step up and defend their people. And that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to step up, and I'm trying to take the heat. I'm trying to become the target so that we can have a real conversation, and you can blame it all on me. I'm okay with that. As long as we continue the conversation, I'm okay with whatever attacks come my way.
I'm going to raise a question, and this is, I don't know how it's going to be. The fact that you're in the military,
yes.
Do you think that have any bearing on your leadership style? I was in the military, too. And
right.
I hear something from you that resonates with me very, very strongly.
Well, you know, it's one thing I teach my own students is that everything is about the human experience. And my human experience, the thing I would gravitate towards the most as far as affecting my being as a human is my mother. That's first and foremost. My mother affected me in so many ways, even to this day. She's my biggest supporter. She's my biggest fan. But yes, the military absolutely played a role, but I wouldn't say it made me who I am. My mother made me who I am, raising me the way she did, with strong convictions, and she never let me get away with anything. And I appreciate that about her. And that's the way I hold people, you know, to account for themselves, is I don't want to hear your excuses. I want to hear how we're going to fix things, how we're going to work on them. Excuses are for everybody else. If you're going to assume leadership, we don't have time for excuses. And one of the first things I learned at Fort Benning at Officer Candidate School is proper no excuses. So no matter what it is that happens, there is no excuse. You pick yourself up and you move forward and you keep marching on. No excuses. Nobody has time for that. We only have time for outcomes.
Ah, well, I was going to say you were my guy, but then you told me you were an officer. I was an enlisted man. And you know what they say.
Well, I was enlisted for the first part of my military career.
I'm going to say this, and then we'll see if Jesse's ready to come online. And you tell me, did you hear this too? I was from Detroit. I left home from Detroit, got on a train with 60 other guys that was going. Well, I'm in the Air Force, and we go to Texas, Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. We get off the train, and we have two drill sergeants, and they start berating us like you wouldn't believe, calling us every maggot, da-da-da-da-da. And then they said, you're at the bottom. No, they said, shit flows downhill, and you're at the very bottom of the hill. I remember this my entire life.
Yeah.
And believe me, the entire time I was in the military, I was at the bottom of the hill, and shit came my way. With that, I'm going to see if Jesse is ready, because he always has a more optimistic and rose-colored lens than I do. So, Jesse, are you there yet?
I'm on the line, James. I've been listening to, Terry and Gus, and I'm sorry to hear that we have a veteran who stood ready to defend this nation. We have a Latino teacher teaching the Latino neighborhood community, and we have a school system that has given him such a hard time, a veteran, an honorable teacher. I know people teach in this district. This is a great teacher. This is a teacher who students love, who parents love. You know, he steps up to the plate. He did what he always did, same thing he did in uniform. He said, I will defend my people. You know, I'm just upset listening to this. I can't believe we're here for round two. I'm sorry to hear that.
Okay. Terry?
Yes.
Here is Jesse.
Hi, Jesse. I'm going to go see you in Philadelphia.
Oh, I'm ready.
Terry, yes.
All right, I'll be in Philly on the 7th. I'm actually on a radio show tomorrow morning in Philly, but I'll be walking through Camden, the other side of the bridge, and then on the 7th, that's when a group of Philadelphia people will meet me over on the bridge, and they've got a whole day's worth of festivities. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing you,
Jesse. Jesse, this Floridian will be there in solidarity for what you're doing.
Thank you, and I heard your story, too. And, you know, it gives me courage. It gives me courage to hear that we have union membership like you, like the 12 you helped get elected, like Gus standing up, because that's what we need. We have, it's sad to say, but we have leadership that's been silent too long, you know, and so
right.
Encourage me. I'm inspired by your story. I'm inspired by Gus's story, you know, and every step I can take on my walk, it's like, wow, if Gus can put his job on the line, if they could try to gag Terry, I could keep walking, no problem.
And we have to all be there for each other, and you've been there for us. You're there for us. You're like the beacon, and we all have to continue that. That's how we're going to win this thing.
Amen.
What has this past week been like?
This past week has been incredible. New Jersey's on fire. So on Tuesday, I was with the North Students Union, a group of parents called Save Our Schools New Jersey. I was with East Side High School Teachers discuss and cherish love them. The college, the district was telling them that they were turning their school into a turnaround school, and they all had to sign this document if they wanted to keep their jobs, and there were over 100 employees in the school, and none of them signed it. It was amazing, and you know what? They didn't turn around their school, and they were saying that some of them were veterans, some of them were non-tenured, but they all stood together, and it was amazing, and we had an incredible room full of people. I've had teachers walk with me on the wall, and then on Thursday night, Trent had a different young people again, and those young people that embarrassed the state, that wouldn't rebuild their high school, and they put up a website called Blind Eye, and they showed thousands of pictures of how horrible holes in the wall, bugs, you name it, all at their school, and changed the state. So that said, all right, we'll give you the new school now. You embarrassed us too much. But what was amazing, I'm sitting in the room with these young people, and they were so positive. And then at one point, one of them just turned around and looked at me and said, you know something, Dr. Turner? When it comes our turn, we will lead. It is only natural that we will inherit the leadership of this nation. And we will never, ever let this happen to our children, our schools, or our teachers. And I was just so inspired and understood then that victory is ours.
I took that quote and I blasted it all over social media, what that kid said and your reporting of it. And as I said, I think the bottom line for mine was that this is what it's all about. The kids who are going to inherit this situation, they know firsthand, because most of them have gone through from kindergarten to where they are now in the regime of high-stakes testing, the whole nine yards. And one thing that they know better than parents, teachers, and everything, they hate it. They don't want it for themselves. And as I said months and months ago, they don't want it for their own children. So not only are they fighting to remove the yoke from their necks, but to also make sure that the yoke never, never gets put around their children's neck. Powerful army in the making. And when you had that quote from that student, it literally made my day to hear it from themselves.
They're perfect. And they're not only an army in the making, they're already on the ground. So the Trenton students, when the state of New Jersey, the governors in their district told them they could not have a new high school building. There was no money in the budget. And they turned around and they didn't take no. They're like us. They're like, Terry, you don't tell us no. No. And they created a website called Blind Eye and took them on and embarrassed them so much. It got hundreds of thousands of hits. And so they said, we'll give you the new building. And it's the same thing, the Newark Students Union. They didn't just carry a sign 2,000 and walked out of school. They didn't just walk out of school. They occupied Connie Anderson, the superintendent's office. They didn't only occupy her office. They chained themselves to the Board of Education doors. You know what? Connie Anderson is gone. So they're not only the future. They're already on the ground, just like Gus, just like Terry, our young people in Trenton, our young people in Newark. That's what I'm discovering on this walk. It's not like 2010. Sorry, you're saying, hey, Jesse, we're already on the ground. Jesse, guess what? We're digging in. We've dug the trenches. We're fighting. Guess what, Jesse? You know, we're ready to march with you. it's a whole different world. I found victories and successes.
You're heading to Pennsylvania. I think you're going to find the same thing in Pennsylvania, based upon what has been going on over the past year or two that I'm aware of. What are you expecting?
In Pennsylvania, you know, when you look at the leadership that's imposing this this mental slavery on our children and our teachers, a leadership that reduces children to test scores, a leadership that somehow was the teacher evaluations, even if the teachers don't teach the subjects that you're evaluating. When we look at what they're doing, how best friend is them, because they are so foolish. What they did in Pennsylvania is the Pennsylvania legislator said students must pass every single Keystone test by 2017. By my calculation, looking at how many people passed that test, in 2017, Pennsylvania better get ready for 75% ratio of students not being able to graduate from high school. And if that happens in Pennsylvania, you can bet your life there won't be a political politician standing. I have a new chant on my wall. I say, no justice, no votes, no justice, no votes. This is 2016. We can take them down.
Well, I said, the walk has been incredible so far, and the fact that you've been able to give us the weekly update, I'm so hoping that, if nothing else, people who are listening in are beginning to understand that this is a war. It's a war that's being fought almost in every single state, now down to almost every single community, and that it's a war that's going to affect us all, both young and old, black, white, brown, rich, poor. When I say rich, I'll say middle class rich, not the 1% rich, and et cetera. And that what you are doing is bringing the spotlight from community to community to community so that we can all see what's happening, not just in our own locale, but what's happening in the rest of the country. We can begin to see how the war is being fought and resisted. We can begin to see the patterns, as Gus and I talked about, in terms of what was happening to him, happened decades ago to this one particular woman that I had an opportunity to represent, so that for us, Jesse, your weekly report, you're shining a huge spotlight on this war for us. Incredible. And so
this is happening everywhere. It's happening everywhere. The assault is happening everywhere.
Exactly. And this is what this show is all about in terms of trying to, it's called the War Report on Public Education. And that it is a global war, and now hopefully people are beginning to see it's global in the sense that it's happening in every state in this country, as well as different countries around the world. And I got about 2 minutes left, folks. Let me just do something right quick. One, I want to thank our two guests for coming on. This was their first time coming on the War Report, and I hope both of them will come back.
You're welcome.
Two, there was a commonality here that people are not aware of. One is that both of the guests today are Hispanics. They're from different countries originally, well, Puerto Rico being part of the United States, but Terry's from Cuba. That is huge. We have not in the past been able to have the different voices that I have been trying to get for ever since the show came on the air. And today we have made a tremendous step towards bringing in a different set of voices. And I don't mean to say, you know, we're talking race here per se, but I am saying directly that the Latino community is affected as well as the black, and not been able to hear from that community. But this is a first, and that's why I believe and I hope that Terry and Gus and others from the Latino community will come on the show and share what's happening to their community with us to help put another dot on the map here in terms of developing our big picture. So, with that in tow, again, I want both of you to come back at some point, and I'll be working very hard to get this done. I'm going to have to say goodbye. And, Gus, I think people love your story. I think I will hear a lot from the public about your story. Terry, your story. I think the women are going to just jump all over it. One of their kinds of being a big-time hero. So with that, let me say goodbye before I get into more trouble. Next week, I'm going to try and go back to the Elementary Secondary Education Act because it will be coming up for vote sometime very, very soon, and there's a lot more to be said about that. So let me say goodbye, and everyone come back to the War Report next Sunday and have
a
good rest of the holiday. Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.